Right now at the Home Depot, you'll save up to 35% off appliance special buys, like a GE appliance's top load washer and dryer pair. With deep clean and deep rinse options, a reliable heavy-duty agitator, and four precise water levels, just $4.78 each. Wash, dry, save, repeat. Today is the day for doing. With Spring Black Friday savings, now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only while supplies last. Gas, dryer, extra, see store for details, valid through April 17th.
Welcome, everyone, to Creating a Family, talk about adoption and foster care. Today, we're going to be talking about maintaining a relationship with birth parents who are addicted. This is a topic that hits both adoptive parents and foster parents, and it's a topic that comes up frequently in our support groups because parents are really struggling with how best to handle this situation. Important topic. I'm really glad we're talking about it today. Here's a sample of what you're going to hear.
That's why it's important, I think, to have the rules really clearly laid out ahead of time. If it's an infant adoption at birth, then lay it out before the child is born. These are the parameters. If you show up high and we deem that it's probably not safe or good emotionally for the child to see you, we have the ability to say we're not going to go through with this meeting and we will postpone it to the next meeting. Set this all up ahead of time so that you can say, and you know the rules are, that we agreed on are. In other words, if you all agree on it ahead of time, then you're not being mean, you're just following the rules.
This show is brought to you by Creating a Family. We are the National Adoption and Foster Care Education and Support Nonprofit. I'm Dawn Davenport. I am your host and the director of Creating a Family. You can find us and all of our resources, including resources on openness, open adoption, and open adoption in difficult situations, at our website, creatingafamily.org. The Creating a Family show is underwritten by the Jockey Being Family Foundation. Their mission is to strengthen adoptive families through post-adoption services. As their founder, Deborah Waller, chairman and CEO of Jockey International, says, "One failed adoption is one too many." You can support their mission by buying a bear or a blanket at their website, jockeybeingfamily.com. And we thank them for their support. Today, we're going to be talking about maintaining a relationship with birth parents who are addicted. This is a topic that affects both adoptive families as well as foster families. And it seems to be a problem that is increasing, and we're certainly hearing about it more and getting a lot more questions about it. Our guest today to talk about this topic is Kate Cleary. She is the executive director of Consortium for Children, providing support and technical assistance to both public and private child welfare agencies. Welcome, Kate, to Creating a Family.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
I know we've talked, but we so seldom we've not had you on. So I'm so glad you're here for this interview to talk about, as I said, what I really think is an important topic. I want to begin with a question that I think is a good kind of summary of the situation that adoptive and this in this case it's an adoptive but adoptive and foster families sometimes face. This is from Rochelle. We adopted our son 5 years ago. His father was unknown, and his mother was addicted to drugs, an assortment, but now she is into heroin. We promised her an open adoption and agreed to meet occasionally. We didn't have a set schedule, but at first we got together about every 6 to 8 weeks. But then we have now settled into about every 3 months. We ask, and she's using the name Susie, which is not her real name, we ask Susie to be straight for these meetings. The first year or two, I think she really tried, but in the last couple of years, she's stoned every time. At first, our son didn't seem to notice anything, but lately, he can tell that she is weird. Those were his words. She doesn't pay attention to him, and she is zoned out of conversations. I know how much Creating a Family preaches about honoring the open agreement you promised, regardless whether it's a legal agreement or not, so I was thrilled to see this topic. We don't think it's healthy for our son to see his birth mom stoned. We want to protect him. Also, meeting with her seems pointless when she is so out of it. Any help in finding an honorable solution would be so much appreciated. All right, so that is kind of in a nutshell what I think a number of adoptive parents face. So I want to start at the beginning to talk about the nature of addiction, because I really think that's something that we have to ground ourselves in to begin with if we're going to try to understand how to maintain a relationship with someone who is addicted. So let's talk a little about addiction. Any thoughts on, from the beginning, how, what is the nature, and it, does it matter what the birth parent is addicted to?
No, I don't think it does. I mean, addiction is, I try to look at it this way. We all find different ways of managing the pain in our life. Some people overeat. Some people drink too much. Some people do drugs. Some people are addicted to running. We all have ways to handle the difficulties of our life. And unfortunately, some people use drugs. I think rather than be judgy about it, although it's not something, it's not a good path to take, I think we have to understand that frequently it's the drugs talking. Addiction is not my specialty, but I do understand that once they get a hold of you, they're very hard to shake. As somebody who smoked for years and then quit, I think I have a reasonable grasp on how difficult it is. The drugs become your best friend spite of all else. And so I think that addiction is serious. It's a national epidemic. I think a lot of children are coming into the child welfare system or being placed for adoption at birth because of addiction. I think in an adoptive or foster situation, the idea is to manage it, not condemn it.
So if you could give us a couple of principles, key points for adoptive and foster parents to keep in mind, kind of guiding principles that will help us, and then we're going to walk through some different scenarios that adoptive parents and foster parents sometimes face and talk about possible solutions. But do you have any kind of guiding lights, guiding points that we should keep in mind as we progress forward?
Yeah, two things, actually. One is, as always, it begins with you. I would be furious. I'm thinking of kids in the foster care system who were adopted or still in foster care. If I had kids in my care that I loved and cared about, adoptive or foster, being furious with the people who put them there, who abused them, who neglected them, is not a good place for you to be. Dealing with your own stuff first, because you project that onto your child, whether it be foster or adoptive. You're projecting your feelings, which are complex and filled with love and anger. I think that has to be resolved before you proceed. You really have to think this through. The other thing is, don't expect them ever to live up to your expectations. I think we feel that if only they stopped drugs, they would be just like me. Nobody's ever going to be just like you. And a lot of the folks who are whose children are in the child welfare system or generally are raised in poverty, maybe not as educated as some others, not always, however. And so I think learning to accept them as they are and not have unreasonable expectations for their capabilities, those are two things that I think are really important, because I've talked to a lot of prospective adoptive parents working on developing post-adoption contact agreements with their kids. And what I hear is, they expect those folks to all of a sudden meet their expectations. And my thought is, treat them like your crazy Uncle George. Your family accommodates Uncle George. Your family finds ways to work around Uncle George. Your family finds ways to make a check on Uncle George in social situations. And I think that if you handle it that way, lower your expectations and deal with your own stuff. That's my basic advice there.
We actually have a rule at Creating a Family called, it's our number one rule for a successful open adoption, and we call it the slightly annoying grandma rule. and it's approach situations as it would be with your slightly annoying grandma. And the point of it being that you value that it's important for your child and for you perhaps to maintain a relationship with grandma, even though at times she drives you crazy or at times she behaves in ways that are embarrassing or that she sticks her nose in where and tells you things that are not appropriate or you don't want to hear. So how would you handle that situation when your intended outcome is you want to maintain a relationship and still have some way for that person to be play some role in your life because you value that the relationship is important. So it sounds like your Uncle Harry or whatever it was, Uncle, rule and the slightly annoying grandma rule are about the same.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think if you start with your own family and think of the person who drives you crazy the most, how do you deal with them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I think most of us can easily come up with a person in our family who does drive us nuts. And,
sometimes my husband, you know.
Yeah, but maybe not that nuts. It's usually for me or somebody slightly further away.
Thank God.
Let's circle back to the grief. I can think, I like the concept that understanding that part of our frustration in this relationship with our child's birth parent is our grief, and I can think of a couple of things that would spur grief in me and in my case, an adoptive parent, but it could also apply to foster. One would be that if the birth parent used while pregnant, and I see impacts to my child that I attribute to or our doctors attribute to prenatal exposure, you know, there'd be some anger there. There would be some grief there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's big.
It is, but again, go back to, can you change it? You can't change it. If you could, you would have.
Yeah.
If you could, your child would never be your child. They'd probably be with their birth family.
That's true.
So, you know, one of those things that have the wisdom to accept things you can't change.
Yeah.
That's one of those things. It's like, yes, but getting over that anger, I think, is huge, and that rage at look what you did to this child that's so precious that I love so much. Again, it starts with you. And I think that the other thing to realize, and I mean, you're coming from this, let me just say two things. You're coming from this from an adoptive parent perspective. I'm coming from this from an adoptee perspective. I'm an adult adoptee.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually know my birth mother was an alcoholic, and I was removed because of that. And yet she had a lot to offer my life. And so really what you have to look at are what gifts in the midst of all of that human turmoil does that person have to give your child? And to understand that your child has a greater capacity to understand this in a way that's more loving maybe than even you, or be confused by it. And if you can't get around your own rage, you can't help the child maneuver theirs.
And I could also imagine a grief, and perhaps grief turning into anger. We all know that anger sometimes is a mask for grief. I can also see that many times we have certainly preached the benefits of open adoption, and adopted parents go into this relationship with an idealized version of what it's going to be. And
right.
Not all, but many times they do. And then there is the grief bordering on anger that this person is not living up to their side of your dream, and not behaving in ways and not providing your child the things that you thought an open relationship would provide. And that's sad. Yeah, I mean, and yeah, it's sad and frustrating.
There's a lot of fantasy in adoption and foster care that I think we in the field are not incredibly skilled at making families face the reality as opposed to the fantasy. And that's hard. I mean, it's hard to do that until you actually face it. But I absolutely agree. I think we have expectations that somehow we're going to be having picnics together in fields, frolicking mm-hmm. with the children, and then we find out, as your opening statement says, the mom shows up blitzed out of her mind. What
uh-huh.
do you do with that? How do you help your child maneuver it? How do you maneuver it? How do you check yourself and how you're feeling so that you can concentrate on making this okay for your child. And maybe, you know, the mom. I would think that a mom showing up in that condition is merely reinforcing to herself what a horrible person she is. And rather than condemning her, it might be a good time to sit down and have a conversation with her and say, you know, I know you're high, and if that's how you've got to deal with life, that's how you've got to deal with life. But I really want you to think how that affects little John, because it confuses him, and he loves you very much. And confusing him is not a good thing. Could we work out a strategy together? Does it need to be early in the morning before you've had your first fix? Does it need to be, you know, when is a better time so that you could show up and be present for your child? Help them help you solve their problem in a very honest, kind way and a non-judgy way, rather than getting all fluffed out and saying, you're high and this isn't good for my kid and I'm over this. Maybe just have a really honest conversation with that person and start with, you both love this child. She wouldn't show up if she didn't love her child. And if you take that, no matter how you talk about that love or feel about how they're reflecting it, she showed up. That's huge for an addict. She showed up. And so start with that. You know, we find that commonality of love for the child is a really good place to begin to blossom a workable relationship for adoptive and foster, and birth parents.
All right, so let's start with the kind of the premises. What do you believe it is, and I think each parent has to make this decision, obviously, for themselves. Do you believe it is harmful for children to be around their birth parents when they're high? I know that there are many adoptive parents and foster parents, although we're going to talk about fostering a little later. Foster parents have less choice in this, so let's just stick with adoption right now.
Sure.
Who believe that regardless of the age of the child, it is harmful for them to be around their birth parent if their birth parent is using. Thoughts on that?
Well, I'm going to do a big it depends. Here.
Well, it does. It's a fair
thing.
Because
I'm a social worker and we're awesome at it depends. How old was the child? Is it a foster kid who came into care when they were older and they understand that this is why they're there? Then my kind of bellwether would be, how does the kid feel about it? If they're old enough and they don't want to be around their mom when she's high, well, then that's your cue that you stop that connection. If the kid is used to it, then you know that the parent might have something to give that child. I think it's up. You know, the trouble with talking in generalities is each case is different.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that starting the conversations about openness has to start out with your hopes and dreams for the child that you both agree on. Let me just say that. We have a huge program that does nothing but develop post-permanence contact agreements for foster kids moving to adoption. And it's between families of origin and the prospective adoptive family. And we've done 40,000 of those in the last 10 years in California. So this is kind of where we live.
Mm-hmm.
We start out each process doing this with talking about everybody's hopes and dreams for the child, and sometimes it's when things start to go south, to find somebody who can kind of, I'll use the term mediate, but get everybody back and start thinking about the child again and how this is affecting them and what are we all going to do. I think that if we treat parents like parents somewhere, even if they're addicted, they'll act like a parent somewhere down the line. And if not, you know, I think it's up to you. Is the child upset because you're upset, or is the child upset because their parent's high? I think that's a real, you know, something we have to think about, too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I know I wandered there. Sorry, Dawn.
No, exactly. It's that goes back to the, for yourself, own what you're bringing to it, a frustration of the fantasy being denied, fear, also your own background.
Yep.
Were one of your parents addicted, or has your brother become an addict, or your cousin is an addict and is constantly asking you for money, or something that heightens these feelings. So look at yourself first and own that part, and what are you bringing, and then making certain that you can discern the distinction between how this is affecting you versus how it is affecting your child.
And understand that your child will pick up cues from you. I mean, I always say my hobby is working with aggressive dogs who are going to be put down because of aggression, and we bring them back to balance and rehome them. If you want to know how I'm feeling on a given day, look at the dog I'm working with. And it's the same. I'm using that as an analogy. If I want to know how you feel about something, I'm going to look at the child in your care, because they are going to reflect your feelings. And sometimes your feelings can confuse them. Sometimes your feelings can make them feel conflicted about how much they care about or don't care about their birth family. You have to be very careful about what you project to the child in your care, because a lot of what you'll see, you know, I've heard families say, well, every time they visit their mother, they come home upset. And I'll say, how upset were you that they were with their mother? Well, I don't like them to be with her. And then we have to go back and say, well, do you think they picked up on that? You know, because kids do. So I think we have to look at all of the interactions here when we start looking at this. It's really easy to say he's on drugs, forget it. How much of that is you and how much of that is them? And, you know, sometimes somebody can be high and be perfectly present reasonably well. You know, I think that's everybody's call as it pertains to who they're dealing with.
Yeah, I would agree. And keeping in mind that there are medication-based programs using methadone or Suboxone where somebody is on a maintenance dose, that is a form of using. So, but they are not presenting, or one would hope that the dosage they're on was not going to, would not be altering behaviors.
Something else that can be done, and a lot of our agreements do this, which is we have a middleman that mom has to take a drug test a day before the meeting, and that person gets the results. Or the parents meet with the mom first to see what kind of shape they're in, or dad first. And if they deem that they're out of control or too whacked out, the meeting doesn't happen. I mean, there's a lot of kind of things you can do while encouraging that openness without cutting it out, to do some safeguards for the sake of the kids.
That's where I want to move into, and you it was a great segue. It's always nice when that happens. Let's talk about some suggested boundaries and the reasonableness of them, and then practical ways that you can set up to have these actually happen. One boundary that I think we could start with is no drug use or possession during visits or prior
visits.
Right. So you've mentioned a couple of things that we can do. That seems to me to be a reasonable thing, a reasonable boundary to set. A couple of things that I'm going to go back to. One, you said start with the parent, talking with the parent, beginning with the fact that you both love this child and you both want what's best for this child, and you both believe that some type of openness between the child and the birth parent is beneficial. So start with that, and then suggest changing a time. I notice that in the afternoons you are often high. Is morning a better time for you? A day of the week, although that's probably not. But so changing the time is one suggestion.
Well, and I would reframe that, and I think you're right. But I might say, you know, I've noticed that when you show up high, and said in a non-judgmental manner, it upsets our son. Would it be possible for you to make a 10 o'clock meeting and not be high? Because, you know, we all talk about how much we love our son and how much we want him to flourish and not get him upset. He's dealing with some other stuff right now. Would that be a better time for you? I'm trying to make it clear that you're supporting them to be successful. I think that what happens is I hear a lot of judginess about, you know, how awful they are, or we're doing this and we feel noble because we're doing this. I think that if we go into that adoption expands family kind of thought, that it's our job to support them to be successful if we can, to at least make that effort.
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
All right. Absolutely. So changing the time is one option. Another option you just mentioned was drug testing. So let's talk about that.
Right.
It for a lot of adoptive parents, that feels high-handed. But what are some ways that are reasonable to set up, and how do you find the middleman, or maybe you don't need a middleman if you don't have one, or a middle person? So let's talk about drug testing, the practicalities of how that might look.
Well, I mean, I can tell you some of the options that our folks have used in our agreements. One is identify who's stable in the birth family. So sometimes that's grandma. And maybe make grandma be the tester for you, that you touch base with grandma, and mom or dad has to be at grandma's before they see their child. And grandma says, yes, good to go or not good to go. Grandma knows her kid. She'll know if they're high. That's one way you can do it. So engage the birth family to help you, you know, because they would want what's best for their grandchild.
Exactly.
Another is to, you know, get a kind of an official intermediary, whoever that may be. Could be a social worker, could be a visiting center in town, and have them act as the intermediary. The other is to, the concern with blood tests, if they do it like 2 days before the meet, that they could certainly get high between then and the meet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always in favor of more immediate determination, and sometimes that's not a drug test. That sometimes that's just somebody else, the adoptive family could do it, or, you know, a relative, as I said, could do it, just to test to see where they are before the meet happens.
And so you're not talking a blood test. You're talking a face-to-face. Are you presenting as stoned? Are you presenting as straight? What is
right?
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you an interesting story. We were doing an agreement for a grandma and for a dad and his kid, and dad was an alcoholic, and mom was nowhere in the picture, and it was dad whose rights were being terminated. And we said, who's going to determine if he's sober for the visits? And grandma said, I will. And we said, well, let's define sober. And that's a good thing to do, too. What does sober mean? And grandma cut back and said, 2 beers. He can be sober and 2 beers. And we were a little nervous about that. We went to the judge on the case because this was a court-ordered, you know, meeting. And the judge chuckled and said, I know who that is. And if she says he can handle it on 2 beers, he can handle it on 2 beers. So, again, you know, family members know this person. And you don't want to get somebody who hates their guts. That's another piece. Sometimes grandma really is so angry at their son or daughter that they're not a good person. So you need to kind of look around in the panoply of family that birth mom or dad has and say, okay, who here doesn't hate their guts and won't set them up to fail?
And how do you, and let's talk about how it would look if the, because oftentimes in domestic infant adoption, we don't have that constellation the same way we might have when somebody is coming from foster. So let's talk about if the adoptive parent feels that their only person that is reasonable is themselves. Let's describe how that might look.
All right. So you say, we're going to meet. I'd like to meet you at the Denny's near our home before we go see, you know, little Mary. I'm running out of good names here, running out of meet with
Johnny
Mary.
And Mary. Johnny and Mary will be our
go-tos. Yeah. I feel like I'm writing the reading primer here.
See spot run.
Before we're going to sit down with you and let's have breakfast and we want to catch you up. And I wouldn't do it as a check. I would almost do it like, we want to catch you up on where they are developmentally. We want to catch you up on what we're doing. We have some pictures for you. Then we'll all get together with the kids. So you can kind of pose it. Again, I think the more judgy you are of families, the more you're probably driving them more to addiction, the more I think you're making them feel really bad about themselves, the more you look like you're supporting them to make them be successful for their children, the more they'll work with you. At least that's what we found.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's human nature as well. If people feel like you're on their side, then you form a team, and you're more likely
there
to cooperate because you are a part of a team. And you
That's
are
exactly
on
right.
Team Johnny and Team Mary. You both are.
There you go.
Okay. All right. So that would be – and then if you feel like, if as you're meeting with the birth parent, you feel like, okay, they're presenting in a way that's just going to be – they're not going to be able to interact or whatever – then you suggest let's choose a different time. Let's meet again next week, or we'll catch you at the next meeting. This is
well.
We
I would say
forward.
Then I would just say, you know, you seem a little disconnected today, and Johnny really needs you to be connected. Let's put this. I think that we'd best put this off until our next planned meeting. Right. I don't think you need to. I'm not a big fan. I mean, if you want to say let's do this next week, you can. The other thing is I wouldn't necessarily prep Johnny that you're going to see your mom today.
Yeah.
Because if mom fails, then the kid's going to be disappointed and feel even more abandoned than most adoptees feel anyway, no matter how much love they're given. So I would wait to see. But I personally would just say we'll just do this again for our next planned meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever that may be, it might be 3 months away, it might be a year away, but I think they also have to understand in a kind way that there are consequences for their behavior, that you're
mm-hmm.
not going to make accommodations for it, that you understand that that's their way of getting through life, and you're sympathetic to that to a degree. You don't approve of it, but, you know, that's the way it is. But if they're going to bring that into your family, you're not going to break the rules. And that's why it's important, I think, to have the rules really clearly laid out ahead of time. If it's an infant adoption at birth, then lay it out before the child is born. These are the parameters. If you show up high and we deem that it's probably not safe or good emotionally for the child to see you, we have the ability to say we're not going to go through with this meeting and we will postpone it to the next meeting. Set this all up ahead of time. So that you can say, and you know the rules are, that we agreed on are. In other words, if you all agree on it ahead of time, then you're not being mean, you're just following the rules. And I think that that's important too, that you get everything laid out at the very beginning.
And so, all right, so no drug use during, no drug use during or no being altered, no being stoned.
I would say no being altered. I mean, if they need, I hate to say this, you know, an addiction is an addiction, and withdrawal is even less attractive than being high. I don't want them meeting with their child going through withdrawal. So,
that's
about, again,
yeah.
Right. So, I mean, if we say you got to be clean, we're asking them to do something that may not be possible for them to do in an easy manner. It's not like saying don't eat because you're having a blood test for 24 hours, because in that 24 hours, they may start going into severe withdrawal. They're not going to make the meeting anyway. So, I mean, I think that this is something that has to be carefully thought out ahead of time. And help them say, how can you be presentable to your child? Or how can you do this? I mean, I think you have to name it. You're obviously, you know, you're using heroin when you are with, I'll go back to your original question at the beginning. Our son sees that something's wrong with you, which makes him worry about you. We worry about you. What would be a better time? I go back to what would be a better time? I think the use of sobriety is judgy, and it's maybe not a possibility for some of these folks. So what we're really aiming for is presentable to the kids.
And one that ties into, I have heard other parents who will ask the birth parent ahead of time, are you using, are you stoned? And the birth parent, most likely, because addicts do this, will lie and say, no, I am fine.
Right.
And it feels like it's setting them up for, and then the adoptive parents are angry because they said, you lied to me. You know, you
right.
lied to me, and I can't have a relationship with someone who lies. But the nature of addiction is such that they're going to lie.
That's exactly right. I mean, really, our goal here is that they appear not strung out, to your children. Whether they're on something or not, if they've got to take a small amount of drugs to be able to be presentable so they're not in withdrawal, all right, I'm not saying that's good, but I mean, I think we have to face reality here. I would much rather they do that than show up in full withdrawal mode, because that's even more frightening for your children.
Well, and I go back to the fact that many of the treatments that are available right now use drugs as treatment.
That's
methadone or Suboxone. So, I mean, I think we have to acknowledge that, and so if you have the rule that, you know, no substance is entering your body that will alter you in any way, then that would throw out people who are in recovery, or potentially.
Right. Exactly.
All right. Okay. Another problem is before, and in the example that we started this interview with, was on, with somebody who the birth parent was showing, but a very common problem is that birth parents who are addicted do not show at the agreed upon time or place.
Right.
So how can we handle that? One way you've already mentioned is to be careful of what we tell the children in advance. But sometimes
right.
the kids have to have been told because you're leaving or you're only taking one child or whatever. But perhaps not. Maybe you find a way around it. So let's talk about the scenario where the birth parents are not showing.
Well, I'm really a big believer for little kids that you don't share unless you absolutely have to. If that's the case. Now, if mom and dad show up, that says a lot, and that's great. If they're spotty, the kid, it's going to reinforce that child's feeling of not being good enough for them to kick whatever, not being good enough that they'd want to keep them, all, you know, all of those kind of, I'm giving you adoptee feelings here, and
sure.
we don't want to reinforce that. So I would, older kids, I just think you have to be incredibly honest with them. Which is, and I'm thinking 12 and over, 10 and over, depending on how mature they are. You know, we're supposed to meet your mom next Friday, but I talked to your grandma, and apparently mom's having a rough time. I'm not sure she's going to show up. She's going to try. So I think by saying she's going to try, as opposed that she's absolutely going to be there, at least doesn't raise expectations. I think there does come a time with your kids that you really have to talk to them without demeaning their parents. They are their parents. Whether you're adopted at birth or not, you know, they are their parents. I think you have to have an honest conversation with them about mom deals with her pain by using drugs, which makes her not always reliable in making meetings, and to really talk about what that is without condemning the parent. Because to a child, when you condemn the parent, you're condemning the child in a roundabout way.
And another thing is, if children are aging, this is a good conversation to be having with them because they need to know. I mean, ultimately, we are preparing our children to enter an independent relationship with their birth parents. And as they age, we're both modeling that, but we also need to teach them, as you were saying, about the nature of drugs and why people use and how to set both healthy boundaries and how to manage your own expectations for that person.
Well, I think we have to teach children how to manage their own emotions. You know, one thing you never want to say to a kid is, you don't want to grow up like your mother, do you? You know, stay away from drugs. Because I always think if you can find good things about mom, I mean, even though maybe they're addicted to methamphetamines or heroin, what's good about them? Are they really good with clothes? Are they really funny? Are they amazing at sewing? What are they good at? So, you know, to always talk, you need to reinforce what, you got to talk about good stuff about the parents too. And
mm-hmm.
I do think saying, you know, we all deal with the pain inside of us in different ways, and your mom chose drugs to deal with it, and it isn't really working well for her. But this is what it means in context of our family and in you seeing her and stuff. So, I mean, I think that we really have to think about how children take this. If we put ourselves in our kids' shoes, minus our grief and anger, right, and all the other feelings we have, but really put them in our shoes and think about this kid who in foster care been ripped from their home, in infant adoption who've been, you know, lovingly placed, we hope. Nevertheless, somebody didn't work hard enough or somebody couldn't keep them or didn't want to keep them. That's very deep in every adoptee. And so we really have to think and be careful about how we talk about parents to children. And then when you're doing an open adoption, I think it's very important after every meeting, even if it was a little upsetting, to say something like, you know, I really thought that joke she told was really funny, wasn't it? In other words, we need to keep reinforcing that everybody's got good parts, too, aside from this addiction. That's a really difficult thing to do, but we have to remember that the more we reinforce that mom's all bad, the more kids going to think, well, that's my mom. I must be like that, too.
This is an interview with Creating a Family. We are talking about maintaining open adoption and fostering relationships with birth parents who are addicted. We are talking with Kate Cleary. She is the executive director of Consortium for Children. She is a social worker, an adoptee, and she has negotiated, I think, over 40,000 open adoption agreements for kids transitioning from foster care to adoption. Kate,
correct.
Let's talk some about the I'll use this as an intro. We have another comment that somebody has sent in for this interview. She says, the birth mom says she doesn't have the money to get to our meeting place. She says she hasn't eaten. She tells me she doesn't have money for rent, so is living on the street. I don't want my child hearing this. I pick her up, and I've brought her to the grocery store. I know better than to give her money. How do I draw the line between enabling and helping my child and her birth mom build a relationship? I'd like to use this as a jumping-off place to the fine line
Sure.
between loving and enabling and
Yeah.
believing that this relationship is beneficial to our child, so wanting it, but how do we not become an enabler?
Well,
go ahead.
How I would handle that is I'd say, I'm really sorry to hear that. I hope you get yourself together. How about you send a letter to Johnny this time and tell him about yourself? Or we do this through Gmail. You know, you have to have email. I'll send you some pictures. You can fill him in on what's happening in your life, and I'll share it with him. Right? I mean, just because you've been doing one thing, and now they're using that as a trigger point to actually take advantage, maybe, then I would look for an alternative way to maintain that contact and just say to your child, look, your mom's having a little difficulty right now, and so she's not going to be able to make our meetings, but she's going to be writing you a letter. Or help me pick out pictures that we can send to her. I think there are ways to navigate that. I think that reinforcing there, you know, maybe she really is looking for help and you've been the one person, you've been like the mother or father figure in her life
mm-hmm.
since you've adopted
mm-hmm.
her child, and she's turning to you like family. I mean, that's up to you to determine
mm-hmm.
from that letter when she says, I know better than to give her money. I have a feeling this is a recurring thing and mom's been successful mm-hmm. in the past. I would just show her she can't be successful at that. I would just say, you know, I'm really sorry to hear that. I hope things turn around for you. How about we send emails back and forth for a while until you get back on your feet?
I think that especially if you feel like she is, you have become a person that they rely on, you can always simply direct them to the nearest, you might want to talk with this rehabilitation center, although quite frankly they're so hard to get into, but there are community services that you can direct them to that would have a independent person who would be working with them trying to let them know what services are available, where they can find food, rather than you
yeah,
be the person doing it.
You could, except I think that is maybe not your job. If they're at the point where they're there, my bet is if they're homeless, there are tons of homeless programs with outreach in every city in this country.
Mm-hmm.
They know those things are there. That this would just be easy. They'd have money right away, or they'd have food right away, or they'd have, you know, it's easy gratification. I just think that
You know, set your boundaries ahead of time. How far are you willing to go? I mean, if that's what you want to do, but you are parenting then both the mother and the child. And if that's mm-hmm. you're willing to do that, God bless you. If you're not, mom created the situation. Perhaps, you know, it's that tough love kind of thing. Maybe it would be better if mom figured this out on her own.
As I had mentioned at the beginning, creating a family has a really large online support group. And this is a topic that comes up not infrequently. And there are
sure.
definitely some parents who believe that by allowing meetings between the birth parent that is continuing to use drugs or alcohol, let's be honest, it's either one, mm-hmm. and their child, that is a form of enabling as well. Thoughts on that?
Wow. Then I think they're thinking about themselves and not their child. I think what I have found is when we really regret a decision or really don't want to do something, we can find a lot of rationalizations not to do it. And that's kind of one of them. I mean, that is, I think that reality is that's the mother of your child. And, you know, every kid has, adoptee has, foster kid, a noun parent and a verb parent. I don't know who I stole that from, but I am acknowledging it. I stole it from somebody. The noun parent is the person who gives birth to them. And sometimes the same person is the noun and verb parent. For adoptees and foster kids, the noun parent is the person who gives birth to them. The verb parent is the doing parent, the parent that you know, that does the day-to-day parenting of a child. It takes both of those to make a sentence. Benefits for your child, if you think that's enabling a birth parent, that shouldn't be a reward. And if they show up and are appropriate and sober, well, then that's a win for everybody all around. If they show up high, then, you know, you've got to make a call. I think your call is, do you help them or not? Are you adopting a mom and a child, or are you adopting a child? And that's certainly your personal preference. If you're adopting just the child and, you know, mom is kind of on her own except for visits and what she can give to the child, then that's where you are. If you are signing up because you really like mom to help her through whatever time in her life she is, then that's up to you. I don't think that you enabling them is going to make a big difference one way or the other. Let's put it that way, especially when addiction is concerned, right? I don't think they think that through that much.
And I think that a good source for helping to make the distinctions between loving and enabling would be organizations like NAR-ANOM or Al-Anon or any of the ANOM.
Sure.
Because they spend in both NAR-ANOM and Al-Anon, there is a lot of talk about for the family groups, a lot of talk about understanding enabling and how not to become an enabler, but still be able to express love and if possible be there for the person who is addicted. We've been circling around this, and there are times when you're going to have to say the meeting is not going to go forward, and you've given some really
right.
kind and loving language that says, let's meet at the next scheduled time. So that's
right.
Let's talk about some suggestions of maintaining the spirit of openness, even if you feel that you have to reduce contact. And before we go into that, the one thing I do want to say is to caution us to not make changes written in stone. Don't write off the
right.
possibility that birth parents can change. And so don't say from this point on we are going to do X, but suggest it in terms of until change happens. So let's talk about some of the ways.
I'll give you a really good example of that. My birth mother was an alcoholic. Pulled herself together, ended up being a tenured professor at Long Beach State. So people do change. You know, we all go through problem times in our
story.
Lives and how we handle
yeah.
it. And so I think that really when you make those kind of things, it should be, for now, this is what we're going to do. And that's how you should present it absolutes never work. I mean, if somebody says you absolutely can't cross that line, the thing I want to do most in the world is cross that line. You know, don't think about chocolate, okay? So I think the way you pose it is, look, you're going through a difficult time now. Your addiction, you know, your use of heroin seems to have escalated a bit. You're having trouble, aren't you, showing up sober for meetings with we'll go back to Johnny, with Johnny. And it upsets me, own it, for you and for him. And I know it's beginning to confuse him. And remember, at the beginning of this process, we talked about all the good things we wanted for our son. So what I'm going to suggest is that you work on figuring out how you can get it together to be present for Johnny. And let's see if we can't do this via emails or letters or, you know, maybe have Grandma show up next time to visit with him. So I think, you know, you can all creative. Don't think inside the box. We tend to think in absolutes with this. It's either all or nothing. There's gradations. We have families who are never going to meet the birth family, don't even know their names and vice versa, but they exchange pictures and news through blind email accounts, right? That's how they, you know, there are 10 million ways to do openness. It doesn't always have to be mom, birth mom babysitting on Friday nights.
And a couple of suggestions for that, and this really does, it's very dependent upon the birth mom mainly, but we know families who have set up a closed Facebook group with the only
right.
members being the birth family, and that gives you the
that's
opportunity
right.
to reach out and try to connect with others in the child's birth family. And that's another, that leads me into a good suggestion of trying to find out others in the child's birth family so that you can connect your child to that part of their history, and when their birth parents get it back together, there has been a groundwork laid for a relationship.
That's exactly
through
right. I mean, I would always, even if it's an infant adoption, I would say, who else in your family knows about this? And
mm-hmm.
who might like to know about, you know, like to have some kind of news about him? Will you share it? If you can't, is there some way we could? I mean, I think that before this all happens, foster care adoption, rather infant or foster care adoption, I think the idea is cover all your bases beforehand. Think of all of the what ifs. What if this happens? What if that happens? You know, maybe Johnny's not going to see mom, but he's going to see grandma,
mm-hmm.
who's perfectly appropriate, or
mm-hmm.
going to see his aunt, who's also very perfectly appropriate, and might have cousins that your kid could play with.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think there's a myriad of options. I'm always concerned when people kind of look at this as black and white. There's a line you walk over it, we're done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is not a
and
positive
that,
way to approach this.
No, it's not, and it does. It's also not a kind way.
Right.
Because that's not allowing for, number one, it's not what's, if we entered openness because we believe it's for the best interest of the child, it's not recognizing that. It's also not recognizing that people can change. Let's
that's exactly
shift
right.
to talking some about issues that come up more exclusive to foster care. Everything we've mentioned is applicable to foster care, but there are some distinctions. If you had just one distinction between foster and adoption and how to handle this, what would that be?
You don't have a choice, basically. The court or the social service agency will say, mom gets a visit a week, two visits a week, and whether mom shows up sometimes can be a crapshoot, whether mom is appropriate when she shows up, you know, sometimes they happen in visiting centers with a guard with a taser at the door and a social worker watching you interact with your kid, which is artificial, and even the child knows that's artificial. Mom thinks it's weird. I mean, I've done those visits as a child welfare worker, and they're pretty awful. But you don't have a choice. It's not like you can say, okay, you're high this time, you're out, because the court has ordered it. And so you have less options. I think one is, again, that same thing. Identify your own stuff. Resolve it. Look at what's best for the kid. And I think at that point, your work is with the child to help them to understand that their birth parents are terrible people. They just have a problem. and that they're trying to work it out, and to really support the child in that. If you can interact with the birth family, then I think your process is the same. Let's talk about the kid, and you can share what they're doing. Truthfully, 98% of the kids in foster care are there because of neglect, not abuse.
Mm-hmm. Exactly
the parents
right.
love their kids. They just can't parent them. They're either low-functioning or they're addicted or they have problems. I think if you play on that parent's love of their child, even if they're addicted, you're probably going to start off on a good foot. Don't demonize them. But I do think in foster care, unless you're able to have one-on-one interaction with the birth family, which is not always allowed, then I think your support is for the child and figuring out how to make that okay for the child.
A question we received was, we are foster parents to a beautiful one-year-old. He has been with us for 6 months. We are really struggling with his mother not showing up for visitation meetings. We drive 1 hour each way, and half the time she doesn't show. His caseworker is no help. She is addicted, not the caseworker, I think the birth mom. She is addicted, but it's supposed to be an Suboxone program.
You never know. Being a caseworker is rough. Yeah.
It is. In this case, I think she was referring to a birth mom.
I think so, too. I couldn't resist.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, there's some truth there. But it's a stressful job. And that's a frustrating situation to be in, because usually there are, the agency has rules, and so a rule that you could ask for in this situation is, can you have the parent show up an hour earlier when the parent shows? Will you call us, and then we will get in the car and drive the hour? That is not an unusual thing. Apparently, in this case, I don't know whether this person has suggested that. I have heard recently of someone who said the caseworker said they didn't have time to do that. So, but that's a hard one. Any suggestions?
Well, you know what? This isn't the caseworker, I would think. It's the court. The court orders the visitation. And I hate to say this. It sounds cold, but it's true. It's like the little girl, young woman in my office who has to make a ton of copies every day and hates it. And she complains. And I'll say, you know what? It's part of the JOB. That's just the way it is. And unfortunately, if the court orders the visitation, part of you being a foster parent is being there whether mom shows up or not.
Mm-hmm.
So not to sound mean, but it is not in a private agency's purview to be able to waive that. That is a court order.
You know, some suggestions that you could do in that situation, and you're right, this doesn't take away the fact that you've driven an hour.
It doesn't. It's horrible.
It is. But you can, again, think about whether or not you're preparing the child ahead of time. And if it's a younger child, as you mentioned before, best not to if the mother
right.
is 50-50. Another thing you can do is have a backup plan of something. Is there a McDonald's with a play area? In the
exactly.
city where you're going, or is there a park so that you drive there and birth mom doesn't show, you go to McDonald's, everybody gets an ice cream cone and plays for an hour. Sometimes
I'll tell
you about
the smartest woman, the smartest foster mother I ever met when I was a caseworker, and she had a 10-year-old kid on her caseload in her home whose mom was spotty showing up. And the kid was devastated when mom didn't show up. So what this woman did was she found like a play park near where they would visit mom. And she took the kids there, not on visitation days, and it was 45 minutes from her home. They'd make it their special time. You and me are going to make a sandwich, and we're going to go play in the swings in wherever the heck it was. And once a week or so, she would take that kid, and that was the foster mom and the child time together to play, so that became a treat for the child and a normal part of their lives. So when she would show there and call and say, is mom there? And they said no, the kid was just enjoying time with the foster mom. This was their one-on-one time, and not disappointed that mom didn't show up because the kid didn't even know there was mm-hmm. a meeting, because this was something they did as a special moment. So you can turn something that around. You know, the best foster parents are incredibly imaginative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thinking out of the box and saying, okay, I'm committed to this hour drive one way or the other. How am I going to make it
right.
such that, you know, and that this is more pleasant for my kid and that it's
That's
a,
right.
A part of their life. Another question we received was that the foster mom believed that her foster daughter's birth mom was back to using drugs. She thinks that the caseworker, she says, the caseworker believes her when she says she isn't. I don't know what my role should be in telling on her. Thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I'd need to know a whole lot more about that. Is she
yeah.
having one-on-one with the mom that the caseworker isn't?
I would assume
number
so.
One.
And yeah, that's a good question.
Right.
I would assume so by how this is being written.
Well, then my questions would be, what is the appropriateness of mom at the visits? We'll go back to what we talked about a lot earlier. Is mom being appropriate in those meetings? Is she just suspicion she's high, but is it upsetting the child? Is mom, you know, acting relatively okay? I think that she would have to, as a foster parent, if she has that suspicion, at least mention it to the caseworker. Then her job is done. You know, a foster parenting is not like parent parenting. A foster parenting is not really parenting. It's doing what a court, an agency, maybe a private agency, a public agency, and then, you know, tell you to do. And so you have a lot less control. I do think that you have to report it, that I
mm-hmm.
think she's high. But other than that, I think your job is to make it okay for the kid. Now, if mom is totally inappropriate and high, then it's your job, making sure it's not your stuff, to terminate the visit, report it to the worker, and you would have to do this anyway as a foster parent. Mm-hmm. I terminated the visit because she was doing X, Y, and Z, and call it a day. So, I mean, I think that there's two different sets of rules. With an adoption, you have the ability to manage it. With a foster,
yeah.
as a foster parent, you don't, you know, and that's a huge
yeah.
difference.
And in this case, if the mom was acting inappropriate, or even not, if you were having strong suspicions that she is using, then request supervised visits so there is someone else there that can also be able to report.
You could do that too, yeah.
All right. We have time for one last question, and you've alluded and talked about this, around this rather, throughout this interview. How do we explain drug addiction of birth parents to children? When should we start talking about that? And practically speaking, how do we talk about that?
Well, I mean, it depends on the age of the child. It's kind of like talking to your child about sex or being adopted. You know, at what age do they comprehend things as they move along? I tend to think along the lines of, excuse me, along the lines of, you know, we all deal with difficulties in our life in different ways. And when you grow up, sometimes you'll make good choices to do that, and sometimes you'll make bad choices to do it. You know, mommy's on a diet because my choice when I get upset is I eat Hostess cupcakes. Your mom has chosen to deal with her pain using drugs, and that causes her to not be terribly functional sometimes. But she has, you know, I think that we have to equate it and not normalize it so much, but to do it gently and in small bites, and always bringing up. And in spite of that, mom is, you know, a terrific cook, or mom can sing, or whatever, and bring it back just like you can. So, I mean, I think however you broach it, you don't want to demonize the birth parent as much as you'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
They're just another human being struggling with life in a way that is probably not a wise choice, but that's what they're doing.
And especially in adoption situations, you start another way of saying what you just said, which is small bites. We often talk about laying the groundwork. You lay the groundwork very young. And you include
right.
the framework, and then as you continue to talk with your child, you add a little more details. But keeping in mind that this is also a learning opportunity that you don't want to hide from your child. to the extent that there is a genetic connection to drug addiction or to the impulsivity that might lead to drug addiction or self-medication.
Right.
Information that you want your child to have.
That is information. That's information you'd want them to have whether their parents were addicted or not.
Exactly. But this is a great opportunity, a learning opportunity that gives, it's a great opening for you to have this conversation, whereas it's in some ways it's harder if you don't have this opening. You're having to raise these issues. In this case, your child, if they've witnessed it, we call them windows of opportunity, the perfect window of opportunity. But when you are first talking with your child about why they are no longer living with their birth parents, you lay the groundwork for that they were not able to care for you. They struggled.
But they loved you. I mean, I go back to your parents did not love you. They just couldn't parent you because they'd made some difficult choices in their life.
Mm-hmm.
To accept the truth than to have it dressed up, even for children. It's amazing what they can comprehend and handle where we want to protect them. Sometimes just naming it is a lot more affirming for them.
On other courses that we have done, experts have told us, social workers and psychologists have told us that the child needs to know their full story by really around the age of 10 or 11. That gives parents and we find that this applies to all the difficult parts of a child's story. Drug addiction of parents is one, incarceration, domestic violence, incest, conception by incest, any number of things, or conception by rape, whatever, that this is information that belongs to the child, but we find that parents would like to wait. They don't want to shatter the innocence. They don't want to have to tell the child. So it's helpful, I think, for parents to have, and it's much earlier than almost every adoptive parent we've spoken with thinks their child needs the information, which I think is important.
I have to tell you that I remember, and what happens is if you don't tell the truth, the child has fantasies. And trust me, those fantasies are either impossibly wonderful or impossibly awful.
Yeah.
Right? And so really the truth will set you free, as trite as it is true in children too. It's how you talk about it. You should talk about it. Again, if it's a 3-year-old, I would talk about it a whole lot differently than if it was a 14-year-old. Nevertheless, you should talk about it.
With a 3-year-old, your birth mom or Susie or whoever was not able to take, she loved you very much, but she wasn't able to parent. She wasn't able to take care of you. With a 5 or 6-year-old, you start adding more. She made choices that made it impossible for her to be the mom that she really
That's
wants
right.
to be. And then, you know, by the time 8 or 9, you start introducing the concept of addiction. And what drugs
Well, and
do
then and when you get into older foster kids, they know their mom. I mean, maybe they were removed at 10 or 11. Frequently, they're worried about their mother. They want reassurances that they're okay because they parented their mother. So, I mean, I think that, again, the best thing to do is get some advice from somebody outside your family who understands this whole concept, probably go back to you guys, creating a family, because I'm sure you have lots of resources for people to tap into, but I do think that the truth is the best way to go with kids.
Well, thank you so much, Kate Cleary, for talking with us today about this subject, which is an important one and a painful one and a difficult one, but a real one. We really appreciate your being here. Keep in mind that the information given in this interview is general advice to understand how to apply it to your specific situation. You need to talk with your adoption or your foster professional. For those who want more information about Kate or from the Consortium for Kids, you can go to their website, which is Consort for Kids, CONSORT. Kids, KIDS, consortforkids.org. Let me take this moment to remind you that this show and all the resources that we provide at Creating a Family could not and would not happen without the generous support of our partners who believe in our mission of providing unbiased, accurate information to adoptive parents pre- and post-adoption, as well as to foster parents. One of our wonderful partners is Vista Del Mar. They are a licensed and accredited nonprofit adoption agency with over 65 years of experience helping to create families. They have three adoption programs, a private infant program, an international program, and an adoption through foster care program. And we also have Hopscotch Adoptions. They are a Hague-accredited international adoption agency placing children from Armenia, Bulgaria, Croatia, Georgia, Ghana, Guyana, Morocco, Pakistan, Serbia, Ukraine, and they also do kinship adoptions from many countries. Thank you so much for listening to us today. I will be with you next week.
Your hands were made for greatness. Mighty hands for painting, paneling, and clicking the submit order button on HomeDepot.com to get that duvet. And these Egyptian cotton towels delivered right to your door. Do more with decor at the Home Depot. Save up to 30% on select bedding and bath. Now at HomeDepot.com. More saving, more kinds of doing. Valid on select items online only. Free delivery on select items $45 or more. Enter promo code BEDBATH15 at purchase for an extra 15% off. Visit HomeDepot.com for more information. Your hands were made for greatness. Mighty hands for painting, paneling, and clicking the submit order button on HomeDepot.com to get that duvet. And these Egyptian cotton towels delivered right to your door. Do more with decor at the Home Depot. Save up to 30% on select bedding and bath. Now at HomeDepot.com. More saving, more kinds of doing. Valid on select items online only. Free delivery on select items $45 or more. Enter promo code BEDBATH15 at purchase for an extra 15% off. Visit HomeDepot.com for more information.